Hey there, welcome to the show. Well, you know what? I can't believe it. Here we are, you know, getting through March break. You know, weather, who knows, hit and miss. And of course, so is the real estate market. You know, I got a lot to talk to you about this week. Hey, and by the way, I also have a great guest joining me. Have you ever heard of Skyline REIT? Well, you know what? Jason Castellan is one of the founders. Jason's been on the show before. I'm very fortunate. He's going to be joining me here in studio. And I'm really looking forward to catching up with Jason. You know what? If you're looking at people that know a lot about rental properties in Canada, these guys are awesome. So Jason's going to be joining me here in studio in a little while, and I'm looking forward to that. But I do want to talk to you this week, obviously, about what is happening in the real estate market. Of course, you know, the rumors about interest rates, you know, things such as inflationary numbers, what's coming out of the U.S., you know, are they squashing our ability to potentially have interest rates drop? And of course, you know, our government's perception of what we would call affordable housing. Holy smokes. I got to tell you, they are stepping in at something, you know, unbelievably. So I do want to talk about some of that stuff. you know, forgive me if I start ranting a little, because it just happens to happen with me. It's just a natural, you know, I got this inclination that when I start mentioning the government, I start having a real problem, because Chrystia Freeland was out in BC this past week. And she visited a property and wanted to start talking about affordability. And she said, look at, you know what, I just toured a property and it looks like it's really good for people that have low to mid income, abilities. And I think to myself, okay, let's, you know, my ears perk up. And then they start talking about this property. And so how about this? So, you know, we all know what a hotel room looks like, right? You know, they don't call it a bedroom. They normally, if you were to own it, you call it a bachelor. So the no bedroom, 330 square feet, is renting for $1,680 per month. Now, hang on, you know, Madam Minister of Finance, where is that affordable? Hey, how about this, though? When you get the big mansion of two bedrooms at 816 square feet, you're paying $3,300 a month. You know, when we talk about affordability, I don't think those are the numbers that our low to mid-income households are looking at saying, yeah, we can afford this. I mean, do you have any idea how much money you have to make to afford $3,300 a month in rent? Wow, that's insane. And so when we have the federal government who is talking to us about affordability and housing, and they don't have a clue, this is going to be very concerning, folks. And so I know I do rant a little bit about the government. People say, hey, Todd, you really lean right. Not really. I'm just getting away from the left. But my problem that I'm having right now is the perception of what our government thinks we need. And this is really the crux of the problem. Because when we turn around and we try to explain, you know, as the industry, as the real estate industry, both from a, you know, transactional, or if it's building, or if it's rentals, when we try to explain what we need, it's amazing how nobody is actually listening to the people on the ground. You know, when you talk about things about affordability, when you want to purchase a property, for example, we have the stress test. And apparently the Bank of Canada one day, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but apparently one of these days, Bank of Canada perhaps will consider, you know, gracing us with a little bit of a rate reduction. Okay, well, you know what, let's not hold our breath, because, you know, they did a lot of things that they said they weren't going to do, and they didn't do a lot of things that they said they were going to do. So who knows? We'll wait and see. But in the big scheme of things, when we take a look at just the pure numbers, what about the stress test? You know, it might have saved us because we are on the bottom, but when you are at the maximum number of where you think your interest rates are going to be, shouldn't you take the stress test off a little if you think that the Bank of Canada is not going to, you know, rebound and go back up even further? How about make it a little bit more affordable? How about for those people that need to do refinancing, pull that stress test out, even if it's half of what it currently is? So, you know, instead of 2%, it's 1% below. So these are the kind of things I think that we need to look at, you know, as an industry. And when I say industry, I'm talking about everybody that is actually a practitioner of any form of real estate. If you are a builder, developer, realtor, if you are a landlord, everybody that's involved, we need to, A, worry about financing in the big scheme of things, because one of the reasons why we're not building very much, of course, is builders decide to put their hands in their pockets and said, look, government's taking too much on development charges. Our finance rates are through the roof. We're just going to sit and wait. Well, that doesn't answer the question of demand and supply, does it? Because the demand's up, supply's not. And then we take a look at what the Bank of Canada has done. And despite the fact that we're starting to hear a little bit of a plea coming out of the federal and provincial government saying, hey, Bank of Canada, you need to reduce rates. No kidding. We've got a lot of people that are suffering. And no, they were not. And I want to be very, very clear on this. They were not irresponsible when they bought a house. You know, I it's so funny. On social media, I get, you know, slammed by a few people. Well, if people didn't, you know, turn around and blow their brains out when they're buying. Hey, look, Bank of Canada turned around and said, we're not going to do anything with interest rates. And they did. So somebody believed somebody, and then something happened. And so you want to blame the person that spent the money? I wouldn't do that. But what I would say is that, you know what? There's been a lot of pressure put on a lot of families. Affordability has made it very, very difficult. And then, of course, there's the age-old, how many more people can we stuff into Canada without new homes? I mean, let's think about it. You know, have you ever seen, some of those old movies where they would turn around and figure out how many people they can put in a VW Bug? You know, and they're like, people were hanging out of the side of the windows, and, you know, they're hanging outside of the sunroof. Is that what we're going to feel like pretty soon? I mean, think about it. The number of people that you're going to put into the country, and yet you still have the same amount of housing for, 2 million less people. So I don't get it. You know, I don't get this whole thing where the government thinks that they're actually doing something about it, but not listening to the people on the ground. And that's why I keep repeating myself here, is the fact that I believe that they are either purposely delaying things, so maybe when it comes election time, somebody's going to throw a Hail Mary and go, look how great we are. You know, right now it seems like they're on a certain tour to get the, their arms slapped on the back or whatever, or the kudos. Because again, back to the, finance ministers touring around BC saying that, everybody from Saskatchewan would love to live there. I think he insulted people from Saskatchewan. But, ultimately in the end, it's like, you can't get attaboys for this one because you had nothing to do with it. That property that was being built was built, years ago before you guys even realized that there was a housing issue. So when we take a look at where we sit today, and this is what we have to do, everybody, we got to assess where we are and where we need to go. Forget about what's happened in the past. So here's what's got to happen. Drop your development charges. Let's get moving. Okay. I tell you what, there are some municipalities. And by the way, I work with a lot of the outer municipalities, not the GTA, but I work in a lot of the outer municipalities. I can tell you there are some fabulous places out there that are very much encouraging us to build for them, in which we're going to do. They're very positive and pro-businesses, and there's some municipalities that are actually think that they are seriously the center of the universe, and those are the municipalities you don't want any part of. So, we have to take a look at what we are facing on a regular basis. So if you're going to be a real estate investor, where do you invest? It's always the age-old question. A lot of people turn around and say, buy Boardwalk Park Place. I disagree. Okay, you want to go to affordability. You don't want to be negative cash flow. Okay, so do not buy certain areas that are going to give you huge negative cash flow unless you're going to sit there and be a real estate speculator. Now, on top of that, when you start taking a look at, the potential of being a homeowner, so this is yourself, this is you moving into it, why not get a little sweat equity into it? Why do you have to buy the perfect diamond palace right out of the gate? I wouldn't do it. That's not how most of us started. Most of us started, definitely something a little bit older. Heck, I remember my first house. I had to turn around, rip up the shag carpet, and take out the forest gold style toilets. And oh, wow, I can't tell you about the kitchen. I mean, I don't even remember how bad it was, but I had to put in a new one. But in the end, I made money by turning around doing it. So for those of you that are struggling to be first-time homebuyers, are your expectations too high? And this, is, again, goes back to on the ground. There are potentially decent deals out there. And I know today most people are saying, hey, Todd, buying a townhome for $600,000 isn't a great deal. But I'll tell you what, good square footage, great place to start. And then from there, you do a little bit of renovation yourself, customize it, make it your own, use it, live it in for a few years. And guess what? Turn it into an investment property when you move out. Do a refi, pull money out. So if we're going to sit here and constantly complain about a situation, how about we start thinking about internal solutions? And we can do that individually. So again, my internal solution for myself was, okay, maybe buy outside of market, not the hottest market, but buy outside the market. Maybe buy something that needs some work. Maybe buy something that maybe you can get an extra income from. There are solutions, but our overall housing crisis that everybody keeps bringing up, that the government is going to use as an election ploy, you know, that's smoke and mirrors. It's like, look over here. This is what we prepare to do as we sit there and throttle you with the other hand. And quite frankly, this is what I see. It seems like it's getting worse every single week. Every single week, you know, I get in front of this microphone, I think to myself, I want to tell the truth. I want to say, look, this is politicians preparing for an election. If their mouth says real estate, if they make promises to anyone about anything, it's because they're buying your vote. It's about time we stop letting them do that. We need to get at least somebody out there that's going to be a realist. And you know what? Here's the question. I keep asking it. I ask this of every single politician out there. Hey, great. You're promising us something in 10 years. What did you do today? What did you do, you know, yesterday? You know what? Give me some numbers. Hey, I would love to know. Give me the actual numbers that happened in 23. If you're a politician, you should know them, and you should be able to tell us how great you were in 2023 and what you did to help solve the housing crisis. Anyways, speaking of housing crisis, you know what? We've got a seminar coming up, and I'm really, really excited about it. That's right. On Saturday, April the 27th, why don't you join me? You can do it here in studio for my seminar, or you can join me during my webinar. And it's going to be at 11 a.m. And it is called Our Simple Seminar Webinar. Hey, look, you know, the last two seminars, we gave away a total of 5 down payments. Could I be doing it again? Well, you know what? Sign up and find out. So go to thesimpleinvestor.com. And if you're not following me, make sure you do. The Simple Investor 1, go to my YouTube channel. You catch my simple podcast. It's me a little bit looser. And you know what? Love for people to give us the feedback. And hey, listen, when we come back, I'm going to have Jason Castellan from Skyline joining me. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. As I mentioned just before the break, my next guest joining me here in studio, he actually had joined me last year, actually, just before the summertime. And I'm really pleased to have Jason Castellan joining me. He is the co-founder of Skyline Group of Companies, chief executive officer there. Actually, you know, it's amazing his story on how he got started. And Jason, I think I gotta get started right out of the gate, because there's a lot of people want to be real estate investors. I mean, you started really young when you first did it.
Yeah, we started and we were doing it before we really knew that this was going to be a career for us, going to university and coming from a small town and moving to Guelph and starting to buy houses there. We weren't really doing it with a career in mind. We had a lot of spare time when you go to university, and so we were just buying some houses, fixing them up and renting them out. So it turned into a big business from there.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell us a little bit about the company. I mean, I know you've got, you know, a lot of employees, a lot of doors. I mean, you're one of the bigger landlords for sure in Ontario and Canada. Tell us a little bit more.
Sure. Well, we just actually celebrated our 25th anniversary. We incorporated the company in 99, even though we'd been buying real estate since the early 90s. So we got over 30 years in the business. We are four funds development company. We raise our own capital. We do our own management. We do our own financing. We have our in-house legal. We have all our IT marketing, all our in-house services that we use to operate the business. We've just right from day one believed that, nobody, owns and runs and operates a business better than an owner. So we do as much of that in-house as we can. Close to 1,000 employees across all our businesses and our operating companies and our funds that we have within the portfolio. So, we have a lot of great people, and we're always growing. We're always looking to grow. Again, a philosophy and a belief of mine and ours is that my partners that I speak of is that if we're not growing, if we said, okay, we're just going to stay status quo, we're going to lose some great talent. We have to be a place and a business that fosters entrepreneurism, fosters people wanting to come in and be a part of building something. And that's going to attract talent, and that's going to let us continue to grow for multi-generational. For our 25th, we did a little skit, and at the end of the skit, we did a mock-up celebration of our celebrating Skyline's what do we do? I think our 100th anniversary, because that's, we want to be multi-generational, and that's what we're setting our company up to be, long beyond the founders.
Yeah, that's amazing. Actually, you know, it's kind of music to my ears, and one of the reasons why I'm really always excited to have these conversations with you, because, you know, it's something I believe in, and for the people that know me as the simple investor, you know, I always preach generational wealth. I think that we should always be looking one or two generations in advance, and, you know, you just nailed it right there. You know, what's 100 years look down the road, you know? You know, I don't know if they'll turn us into AI, so maybe we'll see it, but you never know.
Well, it's been, real estate's been one of the oldest businesses, one of the oldest businesses.
Yeah, we got to be careful with it.
Yeah, but
it's a family show.
Yes, yes. And, but you know what, like it's endured wars and times and changes and everything like that as a business. And I think AI is going to come along, but the fundamentals of where people need to live, shop, buy, work, is always going to be there. So real estate's always going to have to be the backbone of that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the things I say as an analogy to people is that, you know, it's amazing what technology is doing. And so, you know, in your hand, you have, let's say, an iPhone, and it's amazing what that iPhone can do. I mean, it basically controls your life. But the most important thing is, it doesn't matter how advanced the companies get, it won't put a roof over your head.
Right.
And, you know, that's the one thing we definitely found out during COVID was the importance of that roof over their heads, and not just owners, but tenants as well. You know, that's, it's been a huge, huge thing that I think people recognize more and more the importance of it. You know, one of the things that, so I'm going to flip back to our last meeting, you know, when you came in, interest rates were, you know, Bank Canada rate was at 4.75, and sure enough, they just couldn't resist. They had to round up the the number. It's sitting at 5. Jason, it's been on hold now for, you know, virtually since the summertime. And what do you think? I mean, Tiff Macklin, you know, he's a little skeptical, and he came out the other day, and, you know, we talked about this before. Is that when are they going to start letting the rates go down? And his comment, and I found it a little bit controlling to a certain extent. He said he feels that if he drops that by a quarter point, he thinks the real estate market's going to run out of control. And, you know, I beg to differ, because we're not talking about the zero interest rates that we had in 22, right? Like, it's not the same time.
Yeah, we're not children. We're going to act responsibly. We're going to grow responsibly. Of course, interest rates are going to spark and spur again, you know, more development, more opportunities, because, I mean, again, to having the government has the door wide open for immigration, even in the cuts they're making, the new people coming to Canada, the housing demands are not being met, and housing demands are just one of it. These people buy things, they need to work, they need to move around, they consume energy, they do a lot of things that our country needs to satisfy and do that with. So if rates are going to come down, they're not going to come down enough and fast enough to ever catch up to the demand that's coming right now, that exists immediately, and that's going to continue to come down the road.
Yeah, my concern is just your typical Canadian family, though, mm-hmm. right now. You know, interest rates have had really, really put a lot of pressure on some people. And, you know, I've heard a lot of narrative where people say, well, hey, Todd, you know, they shouldn't have bought that house. They shouldn't have done that. Well, look, you know, maybe they shouldn't have. But when you have the Bank of Canada saying, we're not going to lift rates aggressively, right. We'll do it slowly.
Yeah.
And what do? They slapped us pretty hard.
Yeah.
And so people just, you know, took them for their word. And obviously that was the biggest mistake I think some people made. But ultimately, in the end, you know, home ownership, it's important to very, you know, quite a few people. And now we've got a lot of people that are suffering. You know, you've got investors that are underwater mm-hmm. in their things. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if we can send a message to Tiff Macklin, it's like, we need them to reconsider how they're doing it. Get away from the federal spending, because that's you know, artificially inflating,
right.
You know, our inflationary numbers. Mm-hmm. And look, we're good little Canadians. The CPI came out, you know, last month, and it was down mm-hmm. significantly. We're in the twos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should we not be reducing rates by now?
Yeah, I mean, that's again, this problem of housing, where rates are at right now. And, you know, do you remember we had those slinkies? We're going to date ourselves.
Where
a slinky.
Yeah,
well, you know, like, so inflation has gone, and we're waiting for the rest of the slinky now to recoil and catch up with that.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. There hasn't been an adjustment on There has been a little bit of it, but on cost of construction materials and on cost of labor and all that kind of stuff. And still that, until that kind of catches up in an equilibrium, gets to an equilibrium that that we can get building again and get going again. I think maybe the head of that slinky maybe stretched out a little far. Maybe it needs to come back as the rest of the things catch up to that, so that we can get back to meeting the demands, the housing demands that exist, and then all the other things that go with it.
So if you remember, so there's a couple versions of slinkies, right? Yeah. If you remember, yeah. Remember they put animals on the ends of them sometimes. So I'm picturing, you know, the dog's butt catching up to the dog's head. And that's how I feel about the government right now. Right. You know what? Right.
There's the butt is leading and we're trying.
They're going the wrong direction. Yeah. You know, they went back.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's reality. I mean, you know, I've always said that, and I never want to put you on as one of my guests on a political spot, but I've always said the government really, really got it. They have to take their head out of somewhere, because they should leave real estate alone. Okay. More importantly, as soon as any kind of government intervention comes in, they normally make a mess of it. You know, folks, we're going to go to a quick break, but I'm going to have Jason stay put, because Jason, I do want to talk to you, obviously. You know, we're going to talk about the green belt, okay? Because that again, since our last meeting, we had the debacle there. I want to talk to you about building as well, because I know as a company, Skyline does build their own product, which is very admirable. I do want you also to weigh in on affordable housing, because that's a word nobody can figure out what that truly means. What is affordable housing? I don't know if you know, but hey, listen, if you haven't caught my podcast, do it, because you want to find out what Christian Freeland had to say in my rebuttal to the affordable housing out in BC. I know a lot of people caught that article. So why don't you go to my podcast, The Simple Podcast, catch up on it. Go to the simpleinvestor.com if you want to know more. And when we come back, I've got more with Jason Castellan. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, this hour I have Jason Castellan in the studio with me. Jason happens to be one of the co-founders of Skyline Group of Companies. You will have heard of Skyline, I'm sure. I mean, I think everybody has. You guys run some great commercials over the years, but more importantly, it's your product and the ability to have your own REITs and the fact that you do building. And Jason, just before the break, you know, I were just, you know, talking about the Bank of Canada rates and you know, a little bit of my disdain for what they're doing, but ultimately in the end, let's talk about, you know, what happened last fall when provincial government had awarded out, you know, basically repurposing. And I don't even like calling it greenbelt, because some of that stuff wasn't truly greenbelt. It was kind of hidden under the guise of greenbelt. But, you know, a bunch of builders decided that they'd commit to the province. They were going to start building a whole lot of stuff. And then, of course, the backtrack of the provincial government yanked it all off the table. And I think it's made a lot of builders gun shy in a time where we need to triple our efforts in building.
Mm-hmm. We definitely are not keeping up with demand. I think we have to think bigger than just Greenbelt. I mean, Canada is a huge country and there are lots of resources, and maybe the infrastructure isn't quite there, but if we can guide people and into places other than these already overcrowded urban areas, then I think we can build out the infrastructure to satisfy that and start directing Canadians and new Canadians into different parts of the country, because it's a beautiful country and there's lots of great places to live, and we can spread that developing out, and we don't need to, you know, all be concentrated in one area. So to keep up with that is you know, it's something that's very difficult right now. We're behind and getting further behind, and so building and developing is going to be a very important role, and it has to be reactivated. It has to be made easier. We got to get rid of a lot of red tape and a lot of bureaucracy that holds us back from being able to meet that. And, you know, as you and I spoke off air before this, there are a lot of communities that are, though they open up their doors and they're very welcoming and they see what the economic spurring that it can create for their economy. And then there's others that think that the influx and all of this is because of them, and that's not, you know, that's not the right attitude or healthy attitude to have.
Yeah, we had talked earlier and you'd mentioned, you know, the influx of new Canadians coming in, the immigration.
Yep. 2023
was a staggering number, much higher than reported. You know, inside sources say we were almost at 2 million, including students, and you know, 2 million people into a country the size of Canada. It doesn't seem like very much, but the problem is as you had alluded, our urban centers are where everybody focuses. And of course, half of those people would have come to Ontario and the greater part of that to the GTA, which does impose a lot of issues. Now, the other, I guess, dilemma when we start talking about rental inventory or housing just in general is the fact that we have this mass aging demographic of contractors. And the fact is that over the next 10 years, we are going to lose probably 35 to 40% of the trades just to natural attrition due to retirement.
Right.
New people coming in, they're not the ones picking up the hammers. We're looking at people that are, coming in more from, they've got a certain degree. They don't want to build. And I mean, this isn't slighting them, but that's how Canada was originally built.
Yeah.
Is that we the trades in the 50s and 60s built Canada.
Yeah.
And those were all the new immigrants.
Yeah, it's something we have to work with. We are seeing that there are new ways. I mean, there's new building ways of getting things done, and a little more automated and a little more simpler. And those really specialized trades maybe aren't quite as necessary anymore, although they still have a place to play and are required. But I think that some of this building, we're seeing... it is difficult to get labor to do it, to get it done. But I think as demand grows and as opportunity grows and as it becomes economically incentivized for people to get into that business, I think we can bring that back. And I think we can encourage that and then start this catch up game to meeting the demand of Canada's housing problems.
So when we talk about the demand, their numbers get thrown around by, governing bodies.
Mm-hmm.
1 minute the federal government saying we're going to build 1.5 million homes, then CMHC comes out and says, no, we need 3.5, and then the major economists of the world saying, no, you need 5 million properties. All staggering numbers.
Yep.
And every single year, I just ask for them to tell us how many houses they built this year.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed how many, what number that is?
It's puny. They can say whatever you want, however many that we think we need. Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant compared to, what are we doing today and where do we got it? Let's start getting more, And that's what we have to focus. Your question is bang on. And nobody wants to talk about it. Everybody wants to do the headline.
Yep.
But nobody wants to talk about reality.
Yeah. And reality is what people live in. So,
yeah.
So, and here's a realistic term. I don't know what it means. Affordable housing, because you and I can sit there and people say, well, it's a percentage of the income. People move this ball all the time, and the government keeps saying we've got to create more affordable housing.
Yeah.
What does that look like, Jason?
It frustrates the heck out of me, the affordable housing dilemma that we're in, because Marty, my brother, we were talking about it one time. We think back, what was your first car that you owned? Was your first car a brand new Mercedes? There was mine that I...
I had duct tape.
Mine was an 86 Cavalier. I remember it. And I paid $1,200 for it. And so that's how I got into driving a car. And then it's my parents that buy a new car. And it's people, up the chain, up the food chain with that. That's just the reality of it. So we need to build more housing. We've got older rental stock, people living in it that can afford to pay more, who will pay more for more services, more amenities, better, just better opportunities to live in. And then the affordable stock is the older stock. That's the stuff that people can be more entry level, get them into, and then grow that way. So take the reins off, get the bureaucracy out of the way, and let's get building more housing, and that will fill up and create a vacuum and an opportunity for people to get into affordable housing. That's my example of what I think affordable housing is. We're looking at the wrong end of this, that every person deserves a brand new tower in an optimal location. That's not going to be affordable. It just isn't going to work.
Well, and then in the same breath, some of the pessimists out there, they want the real estate market to crash, right? Mm-hmm. Because they want to bring it back to affordability. So when people turn around and say, well, the real estate market's, 40, 50% inflated. And this is where, I take out the calculator and say, how do you figure?
Yeah.
Because right now, if we look at any kind of replacement costs right now, I know you have to deal with this stuff on a big level. So do we, insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about replacement value, okay, right now, I am in awe of what our insurance companies are saying it's going to cost to replace this stuff.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's twice what we typically buy stuff at. Sure. And they're saying that's what it's going to cost to replace it.
Yeah.
And where I struggle with people is that, you know, they think that the market should collapse by half, but it's like that, it's nonsensical.
Todd, I have no place or no time for those people. I can't even worry about that stuff. My job is to be optimistic and to grow and to be forward looking. If people want things to crash, they can sit in their armchair and bark away all day long. We got to get people out there doing things and actually acting on the words that they're saying. So those are the people that I'm going to work with and that I want to see things get done. And those are the municipalities that say, come to our city, come to our town, here's a piece of land, we'll waive development charges, we'll incentivize to get construction going, we'll create employment in our community, and at the end of the day, we'll have housing that we will earn tax revenue on in the future, once it's built. Until then, it's just a vacant piece of dirt sitting there, and they've got a housing demand.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's you know, you put it perfectly, because again, you know, noticing different municipalities throughout the province, some are very, very pro business. Some people are pro, you know, companies coming in, trying to create solutions. And, you know, one of the things I have in my office written, don't bring me a problem, bring me a solution, right? And I think that if the right municipalities grasp that concept, and they're looking for solutions. Look, you know, you've got people like, you know, Jason Castellan here, you know, a part of Skyline, even ourselves as the Simple Investor.
Yep.
Look, we're happy to make solutions. Mm-hmm. We really are. Yep. You know, it's not us that are creating the problem or slowing people down. Look, if you guys want, you know, give us the opportunities.
Yep.
And I think it's really important that the outer markets know that, look, we're ready to create solutions. You just have to invite us in. And
We're not competitors, Todd. Like,
no, not
at all. We're in the same business. And I think the more successful you are, the more successful we can be. And then the more successful our society will be in meeting those demands for housing and things like that. So we talked about that.
Yeah, and look, we all want to put together the same efforts.
Yeah.
And we're all, you know, we're both on the same mindset. Let's create a solution. And speaking of solutions, when we come back, I'm going to have more with Jason. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, my guest this hour is Jason Castellan. And just so you know, Jason happens to be one of the co-founders of a Skyline group of companies. And you've heard of Skyline, Skyline REIT. They develop, they have great investment portfolios, incredible, incredible company. One that I actually admire. And Jason, just before the break, you and I were chatting about affordable housing and a lot of people, they're that mindset. Let's move over to a different part. You know, there's been some stuff in the media lately about some of these professional tenants. And I saw a report where a lady was able to dupe 8 landlords, 5 years of rent. And, you know, I want to dispel a couple myths just for a second, and then I want you to weigh in. First and foremost, 99% of all landlords, I think, are great people. And I think that they're in it for the right reason. They're not what we call greedy landlords, as the interpretation that a lot of tenants have. Now, I think that 90% of all tenants are good. And you notice like a little difference in percentages there. Because the 10% that I'm referring to, they're the ones in the LTV not paying landlords and just expecting that they can live for free. And I do take exception to this because, you know, nothing's free in this world. Jason, you know, you have to answer to financial commitments. You have mortgages you have to pay. You have investors you have to pay. We're on the same side of that coin. You know, we have to make sure that, you know, the mortgages are paid, investors are paid.
Yep.
The idea that people believe that, you know, oh, it's a big greedy landlord, I can live for free. I don't know where society has gone so awry on this.
Yeah, well, I mean, for my job at Skyline, I have one ultimate priority and one ultimate calling, and that is fiduciary responsibility to my shareholders. And so in exercising that, though, it doesn't mean, you know, squeezing every last dollar out of the lemon. What it does mean is creating great communities for our tenants to live in, so that they will pay their rent, so that they will have good culture and good community and good responsible and safe places to live. That feeds into the overall calling of what I do for a living, but there are I think out of those situations people that with times like this they just fall on hard times, and that sometimes happens. We have a program that we put in place that will help longstanding and tenants who are in legitimate pickles. Something happens. I mean, people lose a spouse or something, you know, so you want to help them out. And I don't want to lose those tenants over a blip in the road that they happen to be going through. So we have a program that's been award recognized, and some of our peers have adopted as well, for helping them out. So that's where we're at. And then you're just going to have people that they take it on themselves to just be, you know, just to try to circumvent the whole program and the whole situation. I think that's just something we're always going to have to deal with, Todd, and we'll figure out a way. And hopefully the system is set up to help us deal with that so that we can maintain those healthy communities where our good tenants and our paying tenants, and even the ones that get in trouble from time to time, can thrive in and live comfortably.
Yeah. And look, that's a very fair approach, I think, from a landlord to a tenant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously the LTB has been a bit of a conundrum in Ontario. It really did. The wheels really fell off.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a massive demand. They didn't have the staffing. You know, they changed their approach. They've hired more. I know, based with our paralegal department here, that we are seeing, you know, a decline in the waiting time, but it's still taking a while.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice to all landlords, if you're, you know, just managing yourselves, make sure you know the rules, make sure you do fill out the forms correctly, make sure you're bang on, because if you're going to be in front of an adjudicator at the LTB, you've got to make sure you have your ducks in a row. And, you know, that's one of the important things. But to your point, you know, creating a good atmosphere for tenancies is very important as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we don't want landlords bleeding people dry.
Right.
You know, I've never been a huge proponent of the above guideline increases unless it's absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that that's kind of one of those bad words that people are floating around. It's sort of like, well, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to make sure I squeeze every dime out of the tenant. Well, maybe the tenant can't pay it.
Right.
And I think we have to be mindful of where we sit today. You know, costs have gone up a lot.
Yeah,
definitely for, you know, people like yourself.
Yeah,
you know, you take a look at the big picture, but in the same breath, you know, we all have to be fair to people.
Yeah, and the above the guideline increases, they're justified, and they're only a fraction of what the actual cost or the investment that the landlord makes. When you run into that situation, they are a little bit delicate situations, and I understand people. They don't, like, nobody wants their rent going up. But if your services are improving, if your hallways are brighter and safer, and your parking lots are fixed and things like that, because often we run into that. Often, and you know this, when you buy a property from someone else, they usually gave up 3 years before they decide to sell, right? And quit, you know, putting.
We're not mentioning any names here.
No, but you know, that's, you know, in a lot of the older stock that's turned over, that's just the reality of it. So
yeah,
if we're going to go in and we're going to make substantial investments in this to make it better for the tenant, then, you know, getting above the 2.5% stated increase, you know, getting another 1 or 2% above that, it's not ridiculous. And I think that I think most tenants will tell you it's good value.
No, I agree. And especially if the improvements are going to help the tenant, you know, again, we can look at the nefarious landlord that perhaps is pushing the envelope,
sure,
a little too much.
Sure.
And we get that. You get bad operators on both sides of the coin in, mm-hmm, the industry. And,
yeah,
and that's the nature of the beast. You know, yeah, it's interesting though, because, you know, in the case of, you know, let's say the federal government, and you and I were talking earlier about, you know, affordable housing and creating more, you know, rental stock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was funny how the government itself a little while ago said that they, and as Mr. Trudeau put it, we have no carriage in housing, right? Like, yeah, and now, you know, it seems like the campaign is starting to rev up, because now all we hear is housing, housing, housing.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, what are we gonna hear next?
Well, I mean, they're contributing to that. I'm all for immigration. There's, you know, you can do the math. If we want to sustain the population and the infrastructure that we have, we're not having babies like we need to keep the population on a growing trajectory. So we have immigration. So we bring people in, and those people are often adults, and they need housing now. We can't wait to evolve as they're born into this country. So we need to kind of fast track the housing side. So that's fine. The government can open the door to that, but get yourself out of the way on the bureaucratic side that's holding up the developers and the builders to getting this done. And we can, you know, let us go. And the free market will make sure that homes get built and housing gets built in the places and where the demand is. And we can kind of decentralize from these really built up and overcrowded and under infrastructured urban centers and get out. There's lots of great places in Canada. We own a lot of real estate and a lot of great communities. And I think that they can be expanded upon and they can grow and they can be really nice places for people to live.
Yeah, excellent. Well, listen, Jason, it's been wonderful having you back on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I look forward to, you know, having you back on. Jason Castellan from Skyline, great to have him join us. Hey, speaking of joining us, what are you doing Saturday, April the 27th at 11 a.m.? Well, you know what? Mark your calendar. That is for our Simple Seminar webinar. That's right. It's going to be here in-house in our studio. We're going to be running our seminar. And hey, you know what? You know how we've been giving away down payments for some investment properties over the last little while? Could I be doing it again? Well, you better sign up. That way you can find out. Go to thesimpleinvestor.com. Make sure you do sign up. We have some amazing giveaways. So far, we've given away 5 down payments for investment properties. Could we make it 6 or 7? Well, like I said, make sure you sign up. Hey, listen, thanks for tuning in this week. I do want to thank my producer, Aiden. He keeps it simple for me every single week. As well, I want to thank Ian Grant at the head office. You know, he makes sure that we stay in line. But most importantly, I do want to thank you for making us the number one real estate talk show. And more importantly, we are fast approaching 500 shows since our start date. So, you know what? It's been really exciting. And of course, I'll be back next week as usual. I'm your host, Todd C. Slater. You've been listening to Simply Real Estate right here on News Talk 1010 Toronto.